Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Lackluster finishing and atrocious refereeing cost the Addicts dear as the relegation trap door creaks open that little bit wider. Welcome to Charlton Live. So good evening and welcome to Charlton Live on your Sunday evening. My name is Louis Mendez. We're going to be looking back at the 1-0 home defeat against Reading at the Valley yesterday. Joining me to do just that on the phone, we've got Mr. Tom Wallin. How you doing, Tom?
I'm all right, I suppose.
Yeah, got over yesterday yet?
Nah, but games come thick and fast, don't they?
Yeah. So. Exactly.
Can't worry about it for too much
exactly.
longer.
Yeah, you've got to worry about Birmingham very soon. A man who I'm sure is already worrying about Birmingham, of course, is Lewis Catt. How you doing, Lewis?
Yeah, good, mate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not too bad. Is your bum clenching now? A bit worried about the relegation?
A bit, mate. Yeah, a bit. I mean, we've spoken so many times about how tight it is down there, haven't we? And,
are we still talking about the relegation or are we talking about your bum?
Well, whatever way you want to talk about it, mate, whatever way.
Sorry.
Yeah, luckily the relegation zone. Yeah.
A man who has never been accused of being tight, of course, in the financial sense, is Terry Smith. How are you doing, Tel?
I'm good, yes, thank you.
I was going with that.
Yeah, it's been a glorious day with the family, barbecue, gorgeous, lovely weather, and I'm still miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure it's because I'm thinking of Lewis and his bum clenching, to be honest.
Yeah, it's, I'm sorry that I've put that image in everybody's mind on a Sunday evening. On this evening's podcast, we will be looking back at that 1-0 defeat against Reading. We'll hear the highlights, which included a special guest from Valley Pass yesterday. We'll hear what Lee Bowyer made of the game as well. We'll read out some tweets and emails that have come in, discuss, of course, the latest takeover shenanigans that sort of started breaking towards the end of the weekend yesterday. More confusion reigns and frustration, really, over the ownership situation at the Valley. And as I mentioned, there was a special guest on Valley Pass yesterday, Laurie Wilson, joined Greg Stubley and Terry Smith when they were doing the Valley Pass commentary. So we've got a little anecdote that Laurie shared yesterday. We'll listen to that later on before we start to look ahead, of course, to that massive game at Birmingham on Wednesday evening. It's going to be a packed show. So we best dive straight into it then, Tel. So just before we hear the highlights... I mean, there's not many referees who are on Lee Bowyer's Christmas card list, but was it Darren Bond? Certainly won't be.
I thought he was remarkably restrained, or at least he was when I spoke to him and you spoke to him afterwards. I thought he'd be a lot more, vociferous, and he'd be giving it at large. But yeah, he was remarkably chilled considering what he'd just been put through. You just can't. What can you do? You can, you know, it makes you wonder. You spend all the, you know, the weeks and or however long it takes to prepare your side, and then you come up against the side and you prepare tactics if you do, and how best you can beat the side that you're facing against. You cannot legislate for the sort of nonsense we had to put up with yesterday. I mean, you just can't, can you? And it wasn't just the two crucial decisions, but just generally everything else. It was such an inept performance by all three of them. It weren't just the one in the middle.
Yeah, incredibly
frustrating. It was beyond parody.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. And of course, the main points that Terry was referring to there, the goal for Chuksunike that was incorrectly ruled out for offside, and the clear shirt pull on Jake Forster-Caskey inside the penalty area in the closing stages, neither of those decisions going Charlton's way. And Tom, I guess that just adds to the frustration at full time, but it is a case of, well, you'd rather referee decisions didn't come into it, but at the same time, our finishing didn't help either.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend the referee at all, because those decisions for me were clear cut, and we should have had a goal that was ruled out, and we should have had a penalty as well. But despite all that, I don't think we can cover up that performance wasn't really good enough against the Reading side, who haven't been particularly good. I know they hammered a team midweek last week, but aside from that, they've been very up and down. And I think we all saw yesterday as an opportunity to put things right. We spoke on Thursday about the fact that obviously we'd lost to Millwall, which if you're a Charlton fan is no surprise, and we'd lost to Brentford, which is no surprise either. But the other performances in the other games, we've got two wins and a draw, and the draw was a credible one against a good Cardiff side. So I think we've actually been okay since the return. Obviously, we've not been free scoring, but we can't. I don't think yesterday was good enough. And I mean, we huffed and puffed was, I think, the way I described it. But we just never looked like scoring. We could have gone for another week playing football and we just wouldn't have scored. And unfortunately, at this stage in the season, that's what we need to do. We need to put the ball in the back of the net, and obviously makes Wednesday even bigger now than it already was.
And Lewis, I mean, looking at the table, which we'll discuss at further length later on in the pod, but we're sitting 1 point above the relegation zone as it stands. We haven't taken Wigan's potential points deduction into account yet. So we're sitting on 46, Hull on 45, who, I mean, Millwall finally did us a bloody favour yesterday by going up to the KCOM and winning. But, I mean, it's so tight down there, and the fixtures aren't kind for us when you look at our last two games in particular, an in-form Wigan side and Champions Elect Leeds. So, I mean, yesterday really was one of those ones that we had penciled in as a game we had to go and win.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know I sort of felt I kind of, like many, probably wrote the Brentford game off midweek, because I didn't really expect to get anything from that. So there was a lot of focus on the Reading game, because they don't have a lot to play for. They sort of had they can't go up, they can't go down. They're just sort of sat comfortable mid table, and I kind of fancied us to go out there, especially at the Valley, and manage to get something. And the thing is with us at the moment, and Tom mentioned it before, about we aren't free scoring. And I just felt like as soon as Reading scored that penalty after 3 minutes, I just didn't fancy us to go and score two. And that's been sort of our main Achilles heel since coming back from the return. Our performances, I feel that you couldn't really knock them. I feel like we give 100%. We try, as Bowyer says, you know, the team give them everything every single week. But we can't score. You know, we don't have those natural finishers up front, you know, and it makes the whole Al-Sayed thing even more painful now, because you look back at some of these games as you go into naturally, and that the chances that we've spurned, and you think that would someone of that's, you know, he is a better striker than what we've got, Al-Sayed, would these results be very different? You don't want to dwell on that, because we've been dealt the cards we have, but I think our main Achilles heel and what's going to be the main sort of the main point. If we do get relegated, then I do think the letdown of that is going to be just our lack of quality in that final third. And it makes that Birmingham game now huge. And as you say about Wigan as well, you know, they know the penalty that they face, and they're going to be doing everything they can to try and sort of get pick up as many points as possible, so that whether they get docked, when they got decked the 12 points, when they lose them, that it's still enough to keep them in the division. And as you say, Leeds is going to be tough as well. So we've really got to try and get something out of Wednesday. I think if we don't go and win that game, it gives us a real uphill battle to stay in this division. But I've not been overly impressed by the teams around us either. So I think that there's a lot to play for still. And I do think that we've got enough to do it. But the final third is just a real concern for us at the moment.
Yeah, frustration reigns supreme at the Valley yesterday. Let's have a listen then to the highlights of the game over on Valley Pass. As I said, special guest Laurie Wilson joined Greg Stubley and Terry Smith.
Charlton back in numbers now. Osho out to the right-hand side, goes for the return. Meters also out there. Inside it comes to Swift. Swift into the penalty area, and the referee's given a penalty.
I think that's
in the early second. Is it Oshalaja who was behind the Reading striker? The wrong side. And according to the referee, the pressure on. I'm trying to see who that was who burst into the box. Was it Mete? No, it was Rinamata. And down he goes, and the referee points to the spot. Harsh or fair?
I think that's fair, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he got caught the wrong side. It was a great little ball in, split the defence.
Well, it's Puskas who's come forward to take the spot kick, and in the opening 2.5 minutes, Charlton faced a penalty. Can Dylan Phillips do anything about this? Puskas steps forward. Strikes it. Dylan, oh, he's straight down the middle. Dylan not a million miles away, but it was hit with power and there was nothing he can do about it.
Yeah, I have to agree with Laurie. I think it was a penalty. It's a good little bit of football from Reading, in fairness, and Swift, who's their key man in the middle of midfield, with a lovely ball to Minamoto, gets inside the penalty here, and Oshalaja gets the wrong side of him, and there was contact, and I think any time that there's contact from behind, the referee's going to give a penalty.
Backwards to Morgan. Looks for the long diagonal switch towards Matthews. That's a glorious ball, and Matthews has a crossing opportunity for Charlton. Draws it in towards near post. Bond controls. Bond backwards to McGeady, who shoots. It's saved by Cabral. Yes! And Nico taps it in, but he's offside.
I think that might be right as well. But the ball from Morgan was superb. Matthews to Bond.
There's a couple of things there that we said. The first thing, I said that maybe playing behind them, making turn their back. Matthews has gone forward, making Elijah do the dirty work of football. He found the ball into feet, into your striker, and you've managed to get a shot off and a disallowed goal.
Well, it's one for the replays to let us know whether it was. I mean, to be fair, he looked it when he put the ball in, but was he there when the ball was first struck is the big question.
Cullen. Ball down the line looking for McGeady. That might have gone out of play, but the linesman was had his back to it, and Charlton will play on with McGeady. McGeady trying to work a bit of space, drills it towards near post. Bomb with the touch! Oh, it's just wide. He should have scored, and he knows it.
Oh man, how did that not go in?
And there is the halftime whistle. We're here at the Valley. It is Reading 1, Charlton 0. Finds him. McGeady crossing opportunity. Cuts back inside. McGeady chip ball in the penalty area. Enike controls. Enike still has a shot that's deflected. Oh. Great strength from Enike. I think it was that Osho getting back and just blocking the shot.
That was a fantastic little ball from McGeady and strength from Enike there. It's a shame the ball didn't drop. Just wasn't dropping quick enough.
Pierce has got to. Doty on this near side, who rides the challenge. Lovely touch into his own path. Still up against Mete, but he goes past him to the touchline, gets the ball back across. It's headed in. Prattley can't get there. Inches away from the equaliser. So close. Brilliant work by Alfie Doty, but Reading clear it away. Options across, and in the middle is Lockyer. Lockyer goes right. And further right now is Matthews. That's a lovely touch into the feet of Venice. It's got to be a penalty. Oh, no!
That's a pen. He said he dived. I think that's a pen.
I think it was forced. Kaski was pulled to the floor. The referee has said that's a dive and has given a free kick and a booking.
I don't understand why referees think that they're diving when they're the other side of the player. He's the right side of him.
The only question I had was whether the initial contact was outside.
And when he blew his whistle, the ref, I thought he was going to give at least a free kick of some kind.
Well, he waved it away, and so he didn't make his mind up straight away. He waved the decision away, saying it wasn't a foul.
We don't have the benefits of replays, but my first initial thought was he got the wrong side of him and brought him down.
Sends the ball in. It's a deep one again. It's up there. And Nico with a header, but headed clear by Mite, and that's the final whistle. And Charlton have succumbed to a 1-0 defeat here. And it's really hard to take. Really hard to take with a disallowed goal that shouldn't have been, with a penalty claim that was waved away when it was. Charlton just couldn't turn this around.
And the stunned silence in the ground says it all, really. I mean, it's not the end of the world for Charlton's survival hopes, far from it, but of course it makes it even more of a mountain now. Makes Tuesday, or Wednesday night, should I say, even more crucial.
Oh, it doesn't sound any better on second listening, does it, Tell? Greg pointed it out there, and I put it in the highlights so we could hear it. The silence at full time, that really hit me because it's so unusual to hear it. But it just felt like when that full time whistle went, everyone inside the valley, all of a sudden, it dawned on us, oh God, we're in big trouble here.
Yeah, I think there was a collective head on hands moment when that final whistle went off. I think, I think we were all a bit too shell shocked even to be standing up and berating the officials as they walked off, which is what I'd normally do. It was a sharp intake of breath, I suppose, and I think Tom was right, and although not disagree is probably the wrong word, but I have a slight difference of opinion on one thing in terms of the not scoring, because you know we did score and should have had two. Winning 2-1 would have been acceptable. I don't think anybody would have moaned too much about the chances missed. But he's absolutely right, of course, that we haven't, and Lewis said it as well, we haven't got Lyle Taylor, we haven't got that 20 goal a season striker that you'd have put your house on scoring two goals in that game probably comfortably, and that's the position we're in. There's nothing we can do about it, so we are in for a scrap, and we've got to try and get goals wherever we can, and if it's not going to be from the strikers, we've got to make the most of set pieces. And I think yesterday, the one thing, I think, because I didn't think you could fault the effort, you couldn't fault the aptitude of the players, you can knock the fact that we didn't score more goals, of course, but that's the position we're in. The one thing I think that disappointed me more than anything was we didn't vary the set pieces up enough for me. You know, we kept knocking balls into the far side, into the far post for somebody to head back, and Reading seemed to just realise that's what we were doing and coped with it. And I'd like to have just varied that about it a bit, so they didn't know what was coming. Maybe we could have got more dividends out of that.
It was one of the frustrations. So Tom, I mean, which one do you want to take? Do you want to take the offside goal or the penalty appeal that was turned down? Which one do you want to moan about?
Let's go with the offside.
Yeah. So we saw the shot from Aidan McGeady, parried out by the goalkeeper, and Chuksunike hammers it home, and replay show clearly onside. So annoying.
And it was, at the time, even live, it was pretty obvious. And, like, obviously we're watching at home, and it's not like the camera is level at all. So it's at an angle. But even then, I thought, well, there's absolutely no way he can be offside. No way. And you couldn't even see the guy at the back post. I just knew he was there because I'd been watching the play. And then you watch it back, and obviously the replay from behind the goal shows it the clearest view. But it's just, as I think Terry said, just complete incompetence on behalf of the officials. And again, I'm not going to just blame the officials because I don't think our performance was good enough, but Terry is right in what he said, that we did score a perfectly legitimate goal. And to get it ruled out at this stage in the season, I mean, it's not too far a stretch to say that that could be the difference between us staying in the league and not. And with everything that's going on behind the scenes, which you're making us talk about later on, with us potentially going down, it's not even just a case of being in that league. Getting relegated could have much, much wider-reaching consequences for a club like us. And if it comes down to a goal like that, now again, you can talk about the fact that, well, maybe we should have performed better anyway. But to have a goal ruled out like that when we've legitimately scored one is just infuriating. And as I say, when it's as obvious as it was just so annoying, so annoying, because we deserved a goal there.
Yeah, and not the first time we've had a goal ruled out for offside this season when it shouldn't have been. Now, of course, Lewis, that leaves the Jake Forster-Kaski penalty appeal for you then. You know, we're into the closing stages, 5 minutes from the end. We've huffed and puffed. We need something to go our way. All of a sudden, you see Forster-Kaski take the ball beyond a Reading man. And, I mean, clear as day, I could tell in the press gantry from where I was that he had his shirt pulled. And the referee had exactly the same line of vision of me, apart from he was at least, 100 yards closer. And he saw fit to give it the other way and give a yellow card for simulation when it was so obvious that his shirt was being pulled.
It's one of the worst refereeing decisions I've ever seen. I mean, the thing that angers me the most is that he's given a penalty for an identical foul earlier on in the game on the Reading player from Deji. You know, I've tweeted into Greg and Tell, because obviously you guys don't have the luxury of a replay commentating down at the Valley, but the more you watched it, even on the replay, the worse it looks as well. Like, it gets even worse. And it is completely frustrating. It is always seems to be our way that decisions don't go in our favour. Then when Lee Bowyer questions those decisions, it's just made out that, oh, it's just Lee Bowyer for, you know, being Lee Bowyer and giving it to the official and stuff, which is not the case. And as Tom says there, it's so much more than a decision, really. You know, as we've said, the future of the club is up in the air at the moment. What division the club's in come the end of the season will have a huge say in where the future for this club lies. And silly decisions like that can make or break careers. You know, we're talking about the second tier of English football, one of the most watched divisions in the world, despite it being a second tier. And the quality of officiating, time after time we see it, is appalling. You can't really, I don't think, you don't really say it anyway because refs kind of go under the radar, but I don't ever remember us coming on here and sort of saying it was a good refereeing performance today. You know, decisions went our way, it was fairly neutral, he let play go forward. There's none of that, and the quality of the officials in this division is an absolute disgrace, and I'm not surprised because it's the EFL that run it, but it needs looking into. And I don't want to be one of those fans that blames the ref for everything, because I do think that, as Tom says, we had our opportunities to get back into the game. We didn't take them. With the Chucks thing, it's extremely frustrating because that's a striker that's not played a lot of football this season, probably hasn't got a lot of confidence in front of goal, and that goal could have done him a lot of good. He could have gone on to take the penalty for Jake. I imagine it probably would have been Josh that took it, but regardless of the fact, you know, this is a team that is lacking goals, and we've only scored one in each of the games that we've had since we've returned. And if we'd have managed to go one down and turn it round to a 2-1 win, I've done bundles for the confidence going into these last three games. So extremely frustrating. I do feel like we've sort of been had there, if I'm being honest.
And of course, Tell, we were off to the worst possible start with a penalty given against us inside the opening 3 minutes. And try and save a little bit of chat about Albie's part in this until after we hear from Lee Bowyer, because I think people will want to hear what Bo says about Albie. And why he took him off at half time. But I mean, the penalty itself, Albie's runner, it was who went, and it was Deji. I mean, at the time, I didn't notice. I just assumed Deji was caught the wrong side. But when you watch it back, you can see it was Albie's runner who went, and Deji laid hands on him as he tried to track back. And you know, at the time, I thought it was a clear penalty. And I don't suppose you saw that one any differently to me, Tell?
No, that's fair. Well, so it's fair. I mean, that's the only thing that wound me up more since then, because at the time you thought, well, Deji's wrong side. You're right, that's what we thought as well. He's trying to get to the ball from the wrong side. The player's always going to fall over, and the referee's always going to give a pen. That's what you'd feel in normal circumstances, and that's what he did at the beginning. Now, I've watched both of them subsequently on the Quest highlights yesterday, and there is less contact between Deji and the Reading player for their penalty than there was for the contact with ours, with Forster-Kaski and whoever he was manhandling him. And I think there's a couple of observations for me. And the first one is that when the guy grapples with Jake and brings him down, and he's got an arm lock, then an arm round, and clearly a pull. But at the point he does it, Jake grabs his shirt. Whether that's to try and keep up, stay up, keep balance, I'm not sure. But he gives the referee an excuse. And that's the thing. And so, I mean, even the commentators on Quest, they had who was the Sunderland striker at Wembley back in the day? Kevin Phillips. Yeah. He said, no, the referee was spot on because he saw the shirt pull from Jake Foscati. Completely ignored the rest of it. So he gave, the referee was allowed, gave himself an excuse not to give it because he obviously saw Jake holding the shirt, probably just to keep himself standing because of what the guy was doing. And this is the bit that I want to make on all of this, is that given the position we're in, like Charlton fighting to stay in the division, people's livelihoods will depend on whether we go down, stay up or go down. Forget if the officials and people don't know about what else is going on in the club. That's a fact. Reading, mid-table, safe. What type of person, what type of human being would you be when you go into such situations and you think, right, the offside first, the linesman clearly wasn't in the right position, so he guessed. He must have guessed. Either that or he's a cheat. So let's say he's not a cheat, he must have guessed. When you're guessing, would you guess and err on the side of the team that really needs that decision to go their way? Or would you guess against them? What type of person would you need to be to guess against?
I think we're possibly asking a bit much to have the referees go easy on us because we're in relegation.
No, it's not a question of easy, but human nature would suggest that if you had to guess one way or the other, you'd err on the side of, well, they need it more than they do. Do you know what I mean? it's just beyond belief that anybody would go the opposite direction. Yeah. It's just weird.
I'm going to try that sort of thinking on Camelot when I next play the lottery. Come on, lads, I really need this one.
let's that way then. If you had to give somebody like 10 million quid, would you give it to the person who lives in a mansion or would you give it to the person who lives in a tent?
Yeah. And I understand where you're coming from, but even I think that's clutching at straws slightly, Tell.
It's just bending human nature in the wrong direction. I think that must be what happens when you apply to be a referee.
So what you're saying is the linesman may or may not have actually been a lizard.
I think he's not a human being. Yeah, yeah. I think that's definitely where I'm coming from. People have been selecting referees from different planets.
Fair enough. There was a couple of other aspects of the performance I wanted to talk about. Yesterday, Tom, I thought Alfie Doughty again shone when he came on at half time, which does, and it does perhaps raise a question as to why he's not starting. You know, obviously we know we're playing. I mean, there's a lot of people asking why we're playing a left back at Deji, who's not a left back basically, and the likes of Alfie Doughty, who can get forward and back, making the performance he did in that second half, does raise a few eyebrows, I think.
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant in that second half. It does frustrate me that we have become a team that are having to rely on a kid again, because when he did come on and he was outstanding in some of his movement forwards, but we shouldn't be relying on him to have to get down the byline and whip crosses in every time, because we should have enough in the middle of midfield, the likes of people like Johnny Williams, Albie Morgan obviously was off at the time, but was on in the first half. People like Macaulay Bond, you know, again, I know he's come from non-league, but he's shown enough quality in the early parts of this season. And so it felt a bit like a plan B that we're just chucking him on and saying, get down that byline. And I thought Greg and Laurie made a really good point on commentary saying, well, he needs people around him. Because for a couple of those times, we were just expecting him to go off and do it on his own. But that's no discredit to him, because he did. He stepped up and he did it, and he played very, very well. But for me, the frustrating aspect is that we're having to rely on him. I guess I'm not too concerned now, because at this stage it's just about getting enough results and getting over the line. But longer term, whichever division we're in next season, we need to have a clearer game plan, because throwing him on like that is just not really good enough. And in question to your left back at point, again, I don't know whether anybody asked Bowyer about it yesterday, but that's a question that I've wanted to know the answer to. And a couple of the games prior, when Deji's played there, he's explained it, but I didn't quite understand the reasoning for putting Deji in yesterday. It seemed a strange one, and as we say, we'll talk a little bit about Albie a bit later on, but Deji still was the man that pulled him down, irrespective of the fact that it was Albie that let the man go. So, yeah, it was a bit of a strange selection, I thought, yesterday when I saw the lineup ahead of time. But, I mean, Bowyer usually is pretty good at explaining it, and more often than not, I would say he gets it right. So he's allowed a mistake, if we're going to call it that. But it was a strange one. But yeah, Alfie himself, when he came on, I thought did very, very well.
Yeah, and Lewis, we've got to talk about the missed chances as well. Obviously, I mean, there was that good one from Alfie where he got to the byline and it just inches ahead of Darren Prattley with the diving header. We saw later, early on in the second half, Chuksunike brought the ball down nicely and a shot that was tipped over. But obviously, the glaring miss from Macaulay Bon, you know, a minute after the disallowed goal for Anike on half hour. It was Aidan McGeady who had this weird 5-minute spell where he looked really decent and he whipped in across towards the near post and Maka has to score. He has to score.
Yeah, absolutely. I was out of my seat ready to cheer as soon as... And it's just, I don't really know how he didn't make the contact with it. It just felt like in that position as a striker playing at this level, in a game of the magnitude for your football club, maybe not for Reading, but for us, you got to be putting those away, you know, and that would have got us back in the game before half-time and I'd have fancied us to go on and with a bit of confidence do something. But I feel bad because I feel like the last couple of weeks I've been slating Maka about his finishing and I was happy to see him get a goal midweek. I really was, and I thought that might spark it like it did when he came in to cover for Lyle originally. You know, he got that sort of fortunate Leeds goal and then we saw the form of him really, really pick up and I thought that this could be another opportunity for that to happen, and it's just not really happened for him since he's come back, really. I mean, it was a good goal on Wednesday, but you know, apart from that, you're really looking at him and he's taken on that sort of burden of stepping into Lyle Taylor's shoes to get the goals, because we haven't seen enough of Chucks. We haven't seen enough of Hemed. We haven't seen enough of Josh Davison. You know, we are purely looking at Macaulay Bond to step into those shoes, and it's a lot of pressure. I think we do forget the level he was playing at last season, but we've seen him do it before. Maybe he's just having a bit of a blip in confidence. I'm not sure, but I think you can't just look at him all the time, but he'll be incredibly disappointed that he didn't manage to stick that in the back of the net. And Boya, rightly so, was pretty upset about it as well, because it's 3 yards, isn't it? You've got to be scoring from there. And hopefully, it's a harsh lesson for Maka to learn, and he'll come back stronger from it.
Yeah, hopefully he does and does it quickly, because we need those to start hitting the back of the net, starting with Birmingham on Wednesday evening. Right, let's have a listen then to what Lee Boya had to say after the game. We caught up with him over Zoom, and this is what he made of the 1-0 home defeat against Reading.
Disappointment. Again, it's another game that we should have got something from. We haven't really done much wrong. They get a penalty early on. And then after that, I thought we was the better side. I thought we created more clear-cut chances again. And decisions have cost us. The officials have cost us the game today. It's plain and simple. Chuksunike, his goal is a goal. And I said to the fourth official, like, the linesman can't just guess. You have to be 100% right, like, on these decisions. These are big moments, you know. There's careers on the line. At this stage of the season, my players give everything. And we haven't got our rewards. If their penalty was a penalty, then so was ours, because Jake got dragged to the floor and it's a penalty. So you've got the offside, you've got the penalty. It's big decisions, you know, and both times, for whatever reason, I don't even know. I'd love to see what he puts in his report, because I know my report isn't going to be good for him. Someone's got to have a look at his decisions today and something has to be done, because that just wasn't up to scratch. All of them, the ref and the two linesmen, was not good enough today. And you can say that's cost us, but like Macaulay has to score. Chances, can't keep missing chances like that. 3 yards out. Connect with the ball properly and you score. can't miss chances like that. Like it's, it ain't good. It ain't good enough. And I said to the players, like, they're a good group and they keep pushing and pushing and fighting for everything right to the end. And they don't deserve what's happened today. So yeah, I'm very disappointed because we played well, I thought.
I guess it's even tougher to take all these slight margins like the refereeing decisions and the chances missed when it leaves you still a point above the relegation zone with the two teams below you still to play this afternoon. I mean, it's really looking like it's going to go down to the wire now.
Yeah, and today's game was a game that I was hoping that we would pick up 3 points. And I'm disappointed that we ain't. We've done enough to win the game. We've done enough, and for one reason or another, we've come away with nothing again. So, but we've got 3 games to go. And we'll keep fighting to the end. So, Wednesday becomes a massive game now against Birmingham. So, we need to turn up and hopefully we might get a decision or two go our way, because even on Tuesday night against Brentford, that penalty was soft as well. So things, just decisions, ain't, these big decisions ain't going with us. I don't know why, but they're not.
Is that sort of how you have to manage it and your squad now? You just have to sort of draw a line underneath this one and turn your attention to Birmingham, because I guess there's not really any time to spend thinking about this when the games are coming so thick and far.
No, that's it. I'm done. I've done with this game. You've got to move on. You've got no time really to prepare it. Basically, it's just recovery for the players. The lads that haven't been involved, then they get some topping up training-wise, but the rest of them, just wrap them up and get them ready for Wednesday. And me now, tonight, I'll be going home and watching stuff on Birmingham. So, it's quick turnarounds now.
And just briefly on the penalty that Reading were given, I guess Deji just sort of got caught at the wrong side. And from up here, I thought he might have put hands on the player, but I don't know if he had a better view of it than I did.
He just run past Albie. Albie should have tracked him. And then Deji's tried to cover on the inside and tried to help Albie out. And then because of the pace the fella was running, he just got ahead of Deji and Deji tried to lean into him. It's a foul. It's probably the right decision. But again, so was Az. So if you give him that one, Az is a foul as well. So they're both penalties. It's plain and simple as that. If the ref don't see it, then the linesman has to have seen it because he's looking straight across. So, yeah, theirs was a penalty.
You made a couple of changes. Obviously, Chooks and EK coming in for his first home league start, and he was a bit of a handful. And obviously, we've already talked about his clear and obvious goal that was ruled out. What did you make of him again over the course of the game?
Yeah, I thought he done well. I thought he caused them problems all afternoon. Physically, he done well for us. He's got a bit of quality in once he holds it up and turns and he rolls people and I thought he done well for his first start. Obviously, I wanted for him not to really play 90 minutes, but when you're chasing, I had no choice. It was a bit of a gamble to leave him on. But again, I didn't have another striker to bring on. So, but I thought he'd done well. I thought he'd done well for us.
So, of course, we'd turn our attention to Birmingham on Wednesday. I mean, their home record isn't great at the moment. I think they've conceded 3 on each of their last 5 home games. But obviously, previous form never counts for anything. When we go, I mean, it's going to be a big game, especially when you consider the two that come after it as well. So, it's a case of just geeing up your team and I guess hoping for a similar performance from today, just a bit more clinical maybe?
Yeah, I think every single game that we've played, you think the last 3 we've lost, but we've played well. in all of them. Against Millwall, we created better chances. Against Brentford, I thought we done well defensively. Just players just run out of steam. And then today, I thought we was the better side. We created the better chances again. And like you said, we've got to be more clinical. And that's what's hurting us at the moment. We just can't seem to put the ball in the back of the net.
Hi, Lee. Tough discussion after that game, and to try and pick yourself up, I guess. But I mean, trying to look at some positives, you must have been pleased with the reaction, early goal to concede, and then from that point, we really took it to Reading, but just couldn't get that goal.
Yeah, obviously, don't want to give the team a goal start, but the way we started and the amount of balls we put into their box in good areas and great deliveries, I still felt comfortable. I thought, like, once we score, we'll go on and win it. I honestly believe that. We just couldn't get that initial run, you know, that first one, the most important one, because then, again, all the players, their confidence would have gone through the roof. I mean, we'd have definitely gone on and won the game, but we didn't, and so that's disappointing.
We've obviously, we're commentating on the game and the stream, and we're getting feedback from fans about it was a definite goal, it was a definite penalty, and so the fans are feeling it too. And a few have said they'll chip in for your fine if you actually end up saying what you think of them. But I guess that won't help. Is it a case of turning the, and the players obviously angry as well? You could tell as well. Is it a case of trying to turn that anger into a positive for Wednesday?
I don't think we need to do that. Players, like I just said to them. I said, like, there's not a group that I'd swap them for. If you think every single game that we've played since we've come back, we've been very good, I think. And they're fighting for everything. So I don't need to tell them nothing. They know the situation. They know what's at stake. And, come Wednesday, we'll be ready to go again. And we just need to take them chances. We have to take them chances, because if you don't score goals, you don't win games. So that will be the one thing that I hope changes on Wednesday, that we do start taking these chances.
Well, Lee, you know the club as well as any, so you know we don't do it the easy way. So it was always going to be tough, and things were going to be thrown against us to make it tougher. So good luck with Wednesday, and we know we give it your all.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, Lee. Firstly, just want to ask you about Albie Morgan. He played for the first half and then was taken off at the break. Was that always the plan, or was that due to the game because of how you saw it was going?
It wasn't part of the plan, but Albie let the man run past him that he should have tracked, that led to the penalty. So, yeah, he made some nice passes, but he wasn't doing the things that I've been asking him to do. So, in possession. That's the reason why Albie come off. And I thought Johnny came on, and I thought he done well, and so did Alfie. Alfie Doherty, he done well as well. So, but Albie, yeah, he didn't drop the man for the penalty. That's the main reason.
And lastly, you might not have the answer for this, as it seems to be the big question, but how does this team start scoring again? Where do you think the goals are going to be coming from?
Well, could come from anywhere. The strikers are the ones that are getting a lot of the chances at the moment, and they're not taking them. So we look dangerous on set pieces as well, but in open play, I think our wide men and especially are putting great balls into the box. And we're having good chances from 3, 4, 5, 6 yards out and not scoring. So just hoping that someone steps up and starts scoring us goals. Because we need to score.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's Jones.
Yes!
It's
in!
Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo!
Dreamland!
Cullen has scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, too!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero! Here at Wembley! Oh, my word! Oh, my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. We just heard there from the Addicts boss, Lee Bowyer, after yesterday's 1-0 home defeat against Reading. You could hear the frustration in his voice about the refereeing decisions, Tell, obviously, and about the fact we didn't take our chances, the situation we find ourselves in now. But I thought maybe we should concentrate on what you had to say about Albie Morgan. You know, not the first time he said it about him, he didn't track back, but Albie got hooked at half-time. You know, he made that mistake last week, didn't he? He didn't track back. I think it was Jed Wallace, the Millwall player, who got him behind and Dylan have to make a save. And then he's made it this week. I mean, this was in the third minute, and then he got hooked at half time. Do you think that's the right decision, Tell? Because a lot of people are saying, well, even if he has made that mistake, that was nearly 45 minutes ago, and we still need him as a creative influence going forward because he's the man more likely than anyone to play a killer pass.
Yeah, it's a tough one to call, isn't it? I'd like to say that I sort of half agree and half don't, because I think he clearly wants to teach him, and he clearly is teaching him, I guess, in the hard way, right? If you're not doing what you're told, I'm taking you off. Personally, I'd like to say, right, you're not doing what you're told. You've got 15 minutes in the second half to make a difference. Make me pleased that I picked you. Make me, you know, shove the words back down my throat and go and do what we know you can. Because you're right, in the first half, he was one of our most creative players. Some of those crossfield balls that were finding Matthews, for example, were exquisite. But he, you know, he just focused on what he did wrong, which I get, and tough love maybe, but in the position we're in, I'd like to have seen maybe him and Alfie together down that left hand side and see what they could have done. And then Johnny Williams comes on a bit later on in the second half for more of an impact, perhaps. And if you're going to hook anybody for not tracking back, I mean, Aidan McGeady would stand out a mile, wouldn't he? Because you're right, he had a sort of 10 or 15 minute spell. And I like Aidan McGeady, I think he's a good player. But I don't think he's ever tracked back in his life, and if he has, it's only because he's done it by mistake. He hasn't because he's done it deliberately. So, that's harsh. I'm being unfair, but you know what I mean. I think if you're going to hook some people just because they don't track back, then Aidan McGeady would be first on the list, I would have thought. So I think he's singling out Albie to teach him, because maybe it's because he knows, like we all do, there's such a good player in there, but he's got to learn the whole game rather than just a piece of it. But you know, I don't know. I think maybe I'd like to see him maybe swallow his pride a little bit, Lee Bowyer, and just let him do what he's good at, and tell the other people to cover for him, because we need to win games.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, Tom. And I know you have strong views on this. Lee Bowyer himself went through this. He mentioned it years ago, about a year ago, I'd say, in one of his press conferences about how, you know, he was shocked that he felt he was playing well, but I think it was George Graham, I think he said, who took him off.
Yeah.
And didn't play him because he wasn't tracking back. And obviously this is a way that he thinks that Albie will learn, but are we in a position to be going around teaching our more creative players life lessons when we need the points on the board and we need them now?
For me, no.
Absolutely not. And I know me and Nath completely disagree on this point. I'll start by saying I get exactly what he's trying to do, but I think he is holding Albie up to very high standards that, as you say, Boya had at the time when George Graham dropped him or pulled him out the side. But for me, as Tel just said, and I've said it before on shows, Albie's quality going forward is so good. I mean, some of the passes he was finding yesterday, the only other charm player I've ever really seen do it was Jonjo when he first came in, and he would just pick balls out 40, 50 yards to someone's feet three or four times a game. And there was one of the crossfield balls to Matthews in that first half, which was just unreal from a player like that. And I just think we've got enough defensive cover in Cullen, Prattley, Field, Jake, that as exactly as Terry says, you put people there and you just let him, give him that free roll and let him do it. I understand that that's not what Boya wants to do. Boya wants to turn him into a complete footballer. And believe me, if he gets it right, then Morgan is going to be one hell of a player because he's going to have all those aspects. But for me at the moment, you put a couple of shuttlers in behind him and you put the likes of him and Johnny and Aiden up there and you just say, go and have fun and do all the good stuff going forward. Because as we've said, defensively, you know, we've been okay defensively since coming back. We kept, three clean sheets in a row. And it is going forward that's the problem. And Albie's able to unlock doors in that final third. And like I say, I get why Boya's doing it. I get the whole point. But for me, I just don't like that tactic, I think, is kind of my overall point. I would rather just, you know, someone young like that, don't hold him back. Just let him go and do what he does well.
Right, let's have a look at the championship table, Lewis, then. So we're on 46 points. In 21st hole, inside the relegation zone, in 22nd with 45 points. Luton are on 44, and Barnsley are rock bottom at the moment with 43. Now, goal difference for those teams below us is minus 21 for Barnsley, minus 30 for Luton, minus 18 for Hull. We're on minus 11, so if we end up on the same points as another team, then that will obviously play in our favour at the moment. Above us, we've got Huddersfield and Middlesbrough both on 47 points, both with worse goal difference than us slightly. Birmingham are on 49 points, as are Stoke. Again, with worse goal difference than us, although Stoke actually have got one goal better than us. So it's tight. Goal difference is in our favour still, as it was earlier on in the season. What are you thinking, Lewis? I'm looking at some of the teams below us. So Barnsley, their final three fixtures are Leeds away, Nottingham Forest at home, and Brentford away. So they've got three really tough fixtures to play. Hull away at Wigan. Home to Luton, and they're playing Cardiff, so they're playing the teams around them, and then a team that's chasing the playoffs. Obviously, Luton will be at home to QPR, playing Hull, as we mentioned, then playing Blackburn. So two teams probably haven't really got anything to play for there. I don't know if Blackburn are still with an outside chance. No, they've got no chance of getting playoffs. So two teams, not really anything to play for. Huddersfield, their fixture list is, you know, if it's going to load, here we go. They're playing Sheffield Wednesday, nothing to play for. West Brom, obviously playing for promotion. Millwall, nothing to play for. And then you've got Middlesbrough, who are playing Reading away, Cardiff at home, and Sheffield Wednesday away. Three teams. Two teams who've got nothing to play for, and a Cardiff team will be pushing for the playoffs. So a mixed bag. A couple of those teams have got really tough fixtures. Barnsley, I think, stand out there. It's hard to call. I'm looking at every single sort of permutation now of these fixtures, and I just can't call it at this moment in time. I was willing to, before kickoff yesterday, I would have thought if we lost, I'm writing us off. Results sort of went our way a little bit. Obviously, Stoke winning today didn't help, but it's so tight, isn't it? I really don't know what to say.
No, it's incredibly tight. I mean, we always knew it was going to be tough when we came back, but I'd say one thing that has played in our favour, which has not just happened really through this period of the restart, but through the season as a whole, a lot of the teams down there, you know, the Barnsley, Luton, and to name just a few, since coming back, have been on the end of some serious thrashings, haven't they? So have Stoke, Hull, Huddersfield. We're always, and it's been out there, apart from that blip at Huddersfield earlier on in the season, we're always sort of narrowly defeated when we are. You know, it's sort of the 1-0s, the 2-1s. It's never, we never get turned over, if you like, and the other teams are. So we gave Brentford a real go on Wednesday. Brentford, one of the best sides in the division, arguably the best side in the division, in my opinion, hadn't conceded a goal for X amount of time. We score against them in the opening 8 minutes. You know, I think that we've got we have got quality. I think the football we play is better than the teams around us. But the main concern for me is where the goals are going to come from. I think in terms of fixtures, Luton have got a, they concern me a bit because they've got a decent run there. Jones has gone back in and they look a little bit revitalised apart from that 5-0 defeat to Reading. Barnsley have got a bit of a tough ask as well down there, haven't they? With those fixtures and where they are now, I think Barnsley will have a real uphill struggle. And I mean, with us, the Birmingham game is huge because I don't think Birmingham are out of it whatsoever. I think Birmingham, if anything, are more vulnerable than a lot of the teams below them, Middlesbrough and others, because they're four. I mean, they haven't won a game since they've come back, have they? So I think that they could get dragged into it very easily. And obviously, what happens with Wigan, and as sad as it is, I think that could be, it's going to go in our favour. You don't want to see football clubs in those positions, but it is going to go in our favour. So I do think that we have enough. My concern is we've got to get the points against Birmingham and Wigan, because they're the teams around us. You know, they're going to be the real results that matter. Leeds could be champions by the last day of the season, and they may not have a huge amount to play for. They may be pushing to get that first place on the final day. We can't rely on that. So it's going to be really tough. The Birmingham game for me is huge midweek, and we've got to get something out of that and go into Wigan with a positive attitude. And you never know, mathematically that could get us up before we go and face Leeds. But we just got to keep working hard, keep heads down, and it's tough, isn't it? You want to be in the ground cheering the boys on, but you can't. So it's going to be a real. You know, a twist and turn end of a season, and I don't think that it's decided whatsoever yet who's going down, really, apart from Barnsley. I think are probably the only outsiders, in my opinion, of staying up. I think everybody else has a real chance of staying in this division.
Yeah, Preston and Derby still to come for Birmingham after they play us as well, so maybe they could still get dragged back into it as well. Right, let's have a look at some of the messages that came in over the course of the afternoon. Gary says that the problem is, and has been for a while now, that we just cannot seem to score goals. Okay, we have a legitimate goal ruled out yesterday and also a Stonewall penalty denied, but that would have given us 3 points. But for bad refereeing decisions, we just need that rub of the green to go our way for a change. Carl says we need to be convincing going forward. Too many times we looked half-arsed and indecisive. Need players to carry the ball and go at teams. As you say, there are no more slip-ups. 3 games, 2 wins needed. Wins, so we need to attack and to score goals. Dom says, as rubbish as we've been gifted a big lifeline by everyone else being equally rubbish recently. Poor refereeing decisions, but we didn't take our chances. Was worried that Bon injured himself when kicking the boards in frustration after his one. The ownership saga doesn't help either. With Albie, his poor marking left Deji with an impossible situation. Bo's honesty about it is tough, but maybe for his own good, as it is part of the game he has to work at to not be vulnerable at a pro level. Superb player, though, and of course, hopefully he'll bounce back. Cap says people blaming Boya, Bon, Taylor, Solly and Ike, but the truth is under Duchatelet, we were under-invested in the squad, failed to tie up the likes of Taylor and Aribo. Chelsea reneged on Gallagher without any indication so we could prepare. Nimmer and Southall failed to invest in the club and lied about it as well. Bon and Anike were players bought for future development, not a relegation fight. Nobody is beyond criticism, but this must be done constructively and by paying attention to the facts. That's from Cap. Tom says, there were 2 problems with yesterday. The ref's obvious errors and Boya's poor lineup and subs. Why is Deji starting left-back when we have 2 actual left-backs on the bench? And also Boya is scapegoating Morgan again whilst playing him out of position. Morgan's best position is behind the striker where he can play through balls. If Bo doesn't want to play him there, then he should play an actual winger instead. Also, what does Davison have to do to get a game? Hemed and Anike off a little up front. Josh deserves the chance. Is that something you'd like to see brought in, Terry? Do you think Davison could do a job between now and the end of the season?
I think it's a tough thing to do. I think he's certainly a talent, and he's got that bustling approach that can worry some defenders. I think you'd have to pick and choose when you play him. For example, Morrison, our old player, Michael Morrison, yesterday I thought was their best player by a mile. I don't think Davison would have got any joy out of Michael Morrison yesterday at all. So I think it would have been a tough ask to put him in the game yesterday. I don't know what the Birmingham defender centre-halves are like, and if they are a bit suspect, then I'd give him a go straight away because he does worry defenders. He just makes defenders make mistakes by just his presence. Mm. He's got a little bit of pace. He knows where the goal is. He makes decent runs, but he's a young kid. To chuck him in at this level, if those defenders are like big burly centre halves, they're just going to kick you up in the air at a moment's notice. And it's a tough thing for it, to expect a kid to lead the line like that.
Yeah, I was watching a bit of Birmingham against Stoke earlier on this afternoon. It doesn't look like their defence need any invitation to make a mistake. Right, Leon says the defence was solid again for most of the game yesterday. We had the better of the game, but just couldn't find the finishing touch. We can't dwell on the loss and bad decisions. Lucky other results went our way. We need a result up next to relieve the pressure that is no doubt building. Ted says, remain infuriated by the officials' abysmal display yesterday, feeling robbed. Otherwise, defence remains solid. Getting it together, though, in the final third remains our Achilles heel. Bond's ball retention is atrocious, so when he gets the ball, I would prefer him just to shoot. Paul says decisions yesterday papered over the cracks. No striker of championship quality. Bond could potentially improve and be that man, but he needs to be more clinical. Think we might as well give Davison a go, as the current crop are doing everything but score. But let's be honest, as frustration as yesterday was, if someone would have said 43 games ago it would still be in our hands, we would have taken that. This team is not as good as the squad last year. I do feel we will get relegated though due to lack of goals, but we have to fight on. Tom says, same old, not enough shots on goal, overplaying the ball in the final third and poor crossing accuracy. Mina says, would Beckham have been subbed for not tracking back? Morgan can spray attacking passes like Beckham. So odd that he cannot be used in this role with some greater freedom. Yeah, well, we've certainly discussed that. Now, Dan said we should have got at least a point yesterday. The ref and his mates performed poorly. Next game, we have to win. It's still in our hands. Well, a couple of emails came in as well, which I'll just read out before we go to the break. Andrew says, dear Louis, I know you'll have a lot to talk about on tonight's show, but please can you just spend a couple of minutes talking about the women's team and their plight? Yeah, the women's team is still after some help with the funding. There's a 50 grand sort of funding gap between now and next season, obviously, with the fans not being able to come in. So if you go into the women's team website, you'll see how you can help donate. You can sponsor a player, you can sponsor a game, all sorts of ways. Or you can set up a standing order just to help the women's team go, because with that 50k shortfall, there's every chance they won't be able to have a team next season. So they need your support if you can do that. Right, Steve says, hi chaps, a frustrating day all round with the defeat and the latest debacle in the ownership situation. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec. We were totally screwed by the officiating, but we can't blame just that. We created more than enough to win that game. In the first two thirds of the pitch, we're playing well, but it's not happening in front of goal. Bowes must be so frustrated as he can't help the team finish off the moves we are creating in abundance. The forwards need to step up and finish the teams off, or we are down. The defence was good yesterday, apart from Deji, who needs to be stepped down for Alfie, and Cullen was superb as ever. Morgan showed flashes going forward, but Bowes is right about his defensive work. McGeady also had his best game in a Charlton shirt. It's now a season-defining game against Birmingham. Win, and we still have a chance. Lose, and I think it's all over. I'm not sure I can bring myself to watch it and suffer through it again. What do you reckon, Tom? Because I went into yesterday thinking if we lose, that's it, we're done. But, I mean, we lost and we're not even in the relegation zone yet. So is if we lose on Wednesday, I mean, it'll feel like we're done, but we probably won't be just yet, because this is the championship and anything can happen.
Yeah, I don't think we can call it either way. I've got a sneaky feeling that if we win, that might be enough. And the points doesn't sound like it should be, but with everyone losing this weekend, and I'm not going to, probably after we win and everybody else wins, then I won't be saying that. But yeah, it's so difficult to call. I would have obviously had a lot more confidence had our performance yesterday been a little bit better and had we got points. But I think I said it to you and Nate earlier on WhatsApp, that if we can't beat a Birmingham side at the moment who are on the run they're on, then I'm not sure we deserve to stay up, to be honest. And I know our record against the top six has been very good, and there's been some very, very good performances this season. But those are the sort of games you look at, and you need to be putting those away, because they're the points that are going to keep you up. And Bowes said it after Brentford, that that's not the game that's going to define our season. But games against people like Birmingham and Wigan, now I know Wigan are in good form, but teams like that, you have to be winning if you want to stay up. So yeah, I don't think you can call it either way. And as I said, I think on Thursday's show, it's just not going to be a lot of fun these next 2 weeks trying to support Charlton. But yeah, I'll be glad when it is done, and hopefully we'll still be in the championship.
Yeah, we'll see. Liam or Mad Dog Mendonca says, such a disappointing result yesterday. Obviously, decisions didn't go our way, but we must be the easiest team in the league to defend a lead against. We can't break teams down that sit off us. Yeah, Reading sat back so much yesterday as well, inviting the pressure on. I just wanted to comment on Albie Morgan. He's a really talented young player, but I think too many fans on social media have an inflated opinion of him. I certainly don't want to criticise Albie, but I don't really understand the shock that some fans felt when he gets subbed off. Our biggest threat going forward is Alfie Doughty. He needs to start at Birmingham. He is the only person in our squad who has enough pace to put teams on the back foot and get us up the pitch. Sam Days says, hi guys, and unfortunately another frustrating day for us Charlton fans. I believe Bayer has made a mistake playing 4-4-2. It isn't working at all. In the six games, we've only scored one goal from open play. That was a header. Unfortunately, that is not good enough at any level. Luckily enough, results went our way. Three games left with a minimum of two wins needed to have even a chance of staying up. It's still in our hands. We've got three cup finals now to play. Hopefully players can find confidence and be clinical and in all the chances we're creating to keep us in the championship. I trust that Bowyer will be able to keep us up. Coming your heads, that's from Sam. Phil sent a message. Hi guys, hugely disappointing result yesterday, but with our strike force, it's predictable, unfortunately. Let's be honest, we're a championship club playing with a League One team. The thought of playing League One football next season is unbearable. However, on the plus side, if the worst happens, Du Châtelet, Elliot, Southall and whoever else owns the club will get less than they thought when eventually the club does get a decent owner. And finally, Tom comes in and says, as soon as Reading had the penalty from the first few minutes of the game, I thought that we were not going to get the 3 points. And also, offside, what offside? We must win the game on Wednesday. We go again. And that is from Tom. Right, cheers for your message, Tom. Let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. When we come back, we will discuss some of the more frustrating elements of the club, which is, of course, the absolute shambles that is pretending to be our ownership at the moment. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
I think Gallagher keeping in for Charlton. He's under a bit of pressure, flicks it on towards Pearce. Little flick forward towards Williams. He's onside. Williams in a bounce here. Collects. Williams. Skies past Allen. No, Williams. Oh. Can Gallagher get on a retrieving ball? He can, but further wide. Gallagher, ball into Cullen. Cullen has got Bradley behind him. Cullen into the penalty area. Cullen still, ball across goal. Comes Williams. And he can.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. The ownership then, let's get this over and done with. What a load of rubbish, basically. There's no nice way of putting it. It's frustrating, it's embarrassing, it's amateur, the way that whoever's trying to run the club is trying to run the club. It's confusing. I think that's where one way of putting it. It's concerning, certainly, because we have no idea what's going to happen next. But just to sort of sum up what's happened this week, so on, was it Friday afternoon? All of a sudden, anyone who follows ESI on Companies House, you can ask to have an email sent to you whenever there's a change, and I set that up for myself. So I got an email through on Friday afternoon saying that the registered address for ESI had changed from the Valley to sort of like an office block up in Manchester. And you know, it's solicitors and people are saying, like, also it's hard to tell the exact significance of that at first, but someone said to me, oh, it's not unusual for people to change their registered address to their solicitors. So I was like, okay. And then people pointed out that there were some other names that we all recognize there, like Matt Southall's wife, and I think Southall had some sort of name registered to that building as well. So that started the alarm bells ringing. And we thought, well, in fairness, there are quite a few hundred people registered to this address, so maybe it's just a coincidence. But then Chris Farnell came out and said that the change was completely unauthorised, and he was going to start an investigation into it. Okay, so you're thinking, right, well, this is embarrassing, you know. Trying to organise a large quantity of drinking in a brewery coming up now, because surely if you're the owners of ESI, you would have gone through and changed this on Companies House, whether the EFL have agreed to that or not. Clearly that hasn't happened, which raises a lot of questions about the statements that were put on the website about 3-4 weeks ago saying that Paul Elliott was now the owner of ESI. Lewis. And then, of course, we go on to what happened yesterday when bang on full time, perfect timing from, well, Farnell is now accusing Matt Southall, I believe, of doing this. Bang on full time, Farnell and the three Romanians were removed from ESI as directors. And then a couple of hours later, the massacre was completed when Tanu Namir was removed as the director. Again, Chris Farnell saying that he was unauthorised, whoever did this. And yeah, saying that it was Mr. Southall. This is another stunt by Mr. Southall that we're having to deal with. Where to start with this mess, Lewis? What concerns me, again, as we're getting caught up in this stupid game playing, with now Sky reporting that Mr. Southall is going to try and make some sort of grab for the club again and then sell it on, along with Jonathan Heller, is that clearly the current ownership of the club is nowhere near as clear as they were trying to make it out a few weeks ago. So what the hell's going on, basically?
I wish I knew, mate. I don't think words to describe this, I don't think even Nath would say on the radio live. It's just, it's a joke, isn't it? It's at such a time as well when on the pitch we need stability, and it can't be easy being those players. You know, most of them there have extended deals on to play until the end of this campaign and have no idea where their future lies. And they're probably looking at the boardroom upstairs and they're just thinking, what the hell is going on? I mean, Southall in general, how his name's cropped up again and how this has come around, I'll never know. The fact that it's linked to addresses linked with his wife and how Southall can have the cheek, if Southall can have the cheek to think that he has the right to come back and retake control of the club after selling loyal staff down the river and Range Rover gate and all this stuff. You know, it's just ridiculous. The whole thing's a complete farce. And where are the EFL in all of this? Like, the governing body of our footballing division, where are they? They are nowhere. They let these things go on. There's been no statement from them about the ESI, Paul Elliott ownership whatsoever. That was announced, as you say, some weeks ago. We've had nothing on that. Now all of this yesterday, there's nothing. There's no protection from the establishment who are supposed to be looking after clubs like us in such turbulent times. You know, you look at what's going on at Wigan, and there's real concern there and real fear that could be us. And Charlton fans everywhere are going to be worried, and I'm worried all the time. I'm fed up of my club being this laughing stock off the pitch, and I'm fed up of when I see people and they ask, "Oh, how are Charlton getting on? What's going on with the ownership?" It's ridiculous. Like, it's getting to a point now where it's just incredibly, incredibly sad. And I have so many concerns for the future of our football club that you don't even bear thinking about at the moment, because we're so focused on what's happening with our fight to stay in the division. Mm. Once the season's over, where are we going to be next season? What division are we going to be in? Are we going to have a points deduction? Are we going to have owners? Are we going to have any players? Is Lee Bowyer going to be the manager? There's no stability, and it's unfair for supporters. It's unfair for the staff at the club. It's unfair for Lee Bowyer and the players. I'm fed up with our club being in the public eye so much and having these stupid public playground fallouts that just make us look ridiculous. And you know, our club is so special. It's not a laughing stock. And from the outside looking in, if you're not a Charlton fan, you're neutral and you're seeing this going on, you're naturally there taking the mick, because it's embarrassing. Mm. And there's no words, honestly, mate. There really isn't. It's just, it makes me so angry. I barely even read the stuff anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about it on the show over the last few weeks about how, you know, the people who are currently apparently in the hot seat, but, well, not according to Companies House, where you have to update when you've taken over a club. But I mean, if you look at the statement that was put on the club official website on the 10th of June, it says, East Street Investments, the company that owns Charlton Athletic, has been taken over by a consortium led by a businessman, Paul Elliott. You know, who they're saying it's been done on there. The club has been in touch with the EFL and will now meet with the league to begin the process of finalising the change of control, including matters relating to the owners and directors test. But if you've taken over ESI, which is what they seem to be claiming on this club website back in early June, then that ought to be updated on the company's house website, and it hasn't been. You know, these people were there yesterday. They were photographed there yesterday by the press, because that's what happens when you go to a football ground. If you're in a football ground, someone's going to take your photo, and you can't stop them doing it. The people's trust in Chris Farnell, Paul Elliott, Mohamed El Khashashi will not exist. I mean, it shouldn't exist anyway, I don't think. But they'll see this sort of shenanigans and seeing that they've been told that the ESI has been overtaken when they haven't. And people will quite rightly be questioning the motives of these three people. Terry.
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't come to me. Because it's just nonsense, isn't it? I mean, you can't grasp it. I mean, on the one side, you're thinking, well, this whole company's house thing, and this, if the first ESI legitimately took over the club and their name was on company's house, that's it. But there are some people saying that actually they didn't legitimately take it over because they weren't approved, they didn't do the process. So therefore, by changing the details on company's house that they owned it, was illegal, which means surely there's they can be brought to court, or some sort of writ can be served. And then you've got ESI 2, who, if ESI 1 had taken over the club legitimately, then they've sold the stake to ESI 2. Now, if that hasn't happened, then again, them changing the details of the company's house is also an illegal act, because if they had no justification or verification to do it, then they've done that illegally, haven't they?
Well, they haven't done it. That's the thing, though.
Well, yeah, but they still put themselves down as owners, didn't they? They've named themselves as owners.
They've done that on the club website, but not on company's house.
Yeah. So if they're not, then that's fraud, isn't it?
I wouldn't. I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure it's fraud. It's confusing, certainly. Yeah.
The latest information is that there now is that Farnell, Farika, Mihal, and the two Mihals have been removed from company's house. So is that legal?
Well, they were there. They were there in the first place. Now, I mean, the people are saying that falsely filing is illegal, apparently, or something. But I mean, yeah. But the fact that someone still has access to the code suggests that they still legally own, as far as Company House are concerned, the club.
So something somewhere for all this to be true, somebody somewhere has done something that isn't legal. By the sounds of it, somebody. So surely, there must be able to be legal ramifications on this whole mess. But, I mean, who knows, of course, to be honest. I mean, it's getting to the point, and I sort of agree with Lewis, where you're almost too scared or, too worried about reading what's coming next. It's just, I mean, we started off, everybody was, we got promoted last season, and there was the whole Netflix thing with Sunderland, and you're thinking, what could our Netflix story would have been like? And at the beginning, it was probably, quite a decent drama about a club against adversity and all what was going on in the background, still getting promotion to the Championship under extreme circumstances. And then it goes from being a drama to more of a whodunit, because there's so many different things going on behind the scenes that it's like a really complicated Agatha Christie plot. And then it descends into a farce and we're then more like a road trip comedy. And now I think we're just like the worst B-movie you've ever seen, where you just don't believe anything was going on. The characters are all rubbish and you wouldn't put them in a school play, let alone a proper film. And the plot just makes no sense whatsoever, because nobody seems to know what they're doing. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, and Tom, the confusion over the ownership and who's been paying the wages over the last month or two, and who will play them this month, will raise concerns. Because if there is this power battle or this power grab, this land grab to become the person who owns the club, then there's a possibility that whoever has paid the wages recently will turn around and say, well, no, if you're trying to say I don't own the club, I'm not going to pay the wages. So we could be back in another trouble. I mean, administration, again, is a possibility. You know, we're talking about how it could happen to Wigan. It could happen to us. I think that's the situation we're in. And you don't really know what's going to happen next.
That's it, yeah. Basically, you've just summed it up there. I mean, when I was growing up and Charlton were in the Premier League, if somebody asked me who owned Charlton and I didn't know the answer, that's because I didn't really care. Then through Roland, I obviously knew who ran the club, because for negative reasons. But if you'd have just come to me then and said, who owns the club? I haven't got the slightest clue who owns the club at the moment. I don't know
what's right. I don't know what's wrong. Like Kel said, I don't know what's legal, what's illegal. The whole thing is such a mess. And all the while, and this is the thing that I just continually come back to, the club is just being passed around like a plaything. And in the meantime, as I think Lewis said, the players are trying to go out there and perform for us. And I'm sure they don't care who the owners are, but they care whether they get their wages at the end of the season. And obviously, footballers are paid pretty well compared to your average person on the street. But even at championship level for us, we're not paying big money compared to some other clubs. And the players are going to be frustrated. Boya is obviously being linked now to lots of clubs. And, you know, it's sacking season at that time of the season. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if he just went, you know what, I can't be bothered with this anymore. Because I've been a fan however many years, and I'm getting to that stage now where I just can't be asked. And obviously we have to do it for this podcast, and I try and be as educated and as clued up on it as I can, because if I'm coming on here, the listeners deserve that at least I've put a level of research in. But I can't keep up anymore. I genuinely can't keep up, and I'm just so sick of it. And all of it, I just want them all gone. And we said it about a month ago, I think. We said when Canoon and what's it first fell out, and we said maybe we're going to end up back with Roland again. At least we knew where we stood. He was a terrible owner and he hated us, but at least we knew where we stood. At the moment, there's just a load of charlatans just passing us around like it's some sort of toy just for their own egos. And I'm just so sick of it because, as you say, administration is a real possibility. And the fact that we might not have a club anymore, it still appears to be a real possibility. So I'm just fed up of it, really. I didn't want to have to talk about it, but I understand that we have to. But I don't know where we go from here. I just don't.
Yeah, the whole thing absolutely stinks, and absolutely everyone involved with it at the moment. I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him. Not a single person who seems to have a claim or a stake in owning the club. You can't say anything good about a single one of them at all. Right, so I mean, let's draw a line under that for now. Let's concentrate on something that might put a smile on your face for 5 minutes. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Laurie Wilson, former Charlton, was he? Well, he played sort of right back, and he played in right midfield as well, didn't he, actually? But he was the sort of bloke. He did put a smile on my face seeing him back at the Valley briefly. I just said loads, obviously, briefly to him because I never really knew him, but I said it was nice to see him back at the Valley yesterday. And obviously, he was on co-coms with Greg and Terry on Valley Pass yesterday. And they had some. I was listening back to the recording earlier. There were some good chats with him. So I thought I'd play you a little snippet because it did put a smile on my face. Now, many of you will remember with Laurie Wilson, he had this song that I believe was first sung after he scored his brace against Brighton on Boxing Day in a 3-2 win, which I think was our first win in quite a while. And we'd been struggling. We needed the points. And Laurie Wilson scored an excellent brace. During his time at the club, I think it took him a while for some of the fans to sort of get on his side. And to that extent, when he did score this brace, he had a song sung about him, which I can't sing word for word because it had one slight expletive in it. But it implied that he used to be not the best player and then turned into a good player. So Laurie Wilson, you'll remember the song, I'm sure. So Laurie Wilson, he was asked about that song by Greg and Terry pre-game yesterday. This is what Laurie had to say. I think you'll enjoy this little clip.
So, I mean, for me, throughout my career, I've always known that, you know, I've always been a hard-working player. You know, I do my best in any position put in. You know, I'll always go out there and give 100%. So I always know that any club that I've gone to, that it does take time for people to grow on the way that I was playing and the way that I do play, because, you know, I'm not going to have, you know, 30, 40 games at, you know, 9 out of 10 every sort of game, but they will understand that the games that I am playing, you know, at 5 out of 10, that 6 out of 10, that I'm giving my best. You know, I'm not having a bad game because, you know, things that are going on. So for me, when I actually got in the car, and I remember it so vividly, and my wife was next to me that had been at the game as well, and I sort of, we brought it up in the car, and I sort of said, oh, how do I take this? I was like, you know, is it a good thing, is it a bad thing? And we kind of sat there and spoke about it for a good sort of 10-15 minutes, and by the end of it, we sort of just said, you know, not many people, how I found it was, not many people go through their careers at clubs and have songs sung about
That's
them.
Very true.
And you know, and there's many people that I could probably name that don't have a song and that are playing in the Premier League for clubs. So I really took that on board, and I was just like, I'm going to embrace this because it's actually it's quite funny. And to be honest with you, I loved it, and it was the best thing I ever done, was to embrace it and actually go along with it, because I think it brought more to my game when I was playing and it was being sung, because hearing that just it gives you another boost, definitely.
I don't know if you remember, but I think I interviewed you, it might have been at a Player of the Year do, but it was certainly for Cheltenham Live anyway, the radio show.
And I said, when I come second, I think.
Yeah, and I said to you that
still better. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not bothered about that, though. No. And I think I said to you that the song, in my mind, the song was not necessarily, well, how some people perceived it, at least, was that it was almost like an apology from the Charlton fans, that they may have given you a bit of a hard time at the beginning without realising how good you were. And so that's their way of saying, yeah, we thought that's what we thought you were, but now we know you're not.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it.
No, I totally agree with that. Totally agree.
And they had there was no other word that rhymed with with brilliance.
I've got to say as well, just a separate story before we get into match action. I just spoke off air to you about it, Laurie, and I'm so glad this is true, but this is one of my favourite Cheltenham-related stories I've ever had.
Listen to this.
So, as some of you might recall, back in 2000, it would have been 2015, 16, around that era, we played a Friday night friendly against Bolton, and you just left Cheltenham playing for Bolton. And for whatever reason, I was there as a commentator. God knows how they talked me into going up to Bolton on a Friday night to do that. Yeah. And Laurie was playing for Bolton, and we had Guy Luzon in charge. And it wasn't even at the start of the match. It was probably around the 30-minute mark, I got told. Laurie bursts down the wing, does something quite nice, keeps the ball in play or something, does something really nice on the right-hand side, gets a round of applause from those who are in the ground, which wasn't many, to be honest. Probably more here today than it was in that game. And all of a sudden, Guy Luzon suddenly works out that Laurie Wilson's playing for Bolton and just starts shouting, "Wilson! It's Wilson! It's Wilson!" And I'm so glad that you've heard that elsewhere, and I've not just made that up and been someone lied to me about it. I'm so glad that's a genuine true story, and it's one of my favourite stories.
It's definitely true. It was actually Johnny Jackson. He wasn't playing, and he said it was the funniest thing that he's ever seen. He said they was all sat on the bench, and obviously he said, I'm watching you. This is from Johnny. He's like, I'm watching you sort of playing and stuff. He said, and you remember, everyone remembers what Guy Luzon was like. He was very agitated on the touchline. He would run up and down the touchline with the players and bits and bobs. He said, obviously you had gone past him, and then you was on your recovery run back. He said, and he then just clicked and realised that it was you. He said, and he turned around to the bench and was just going, "Oh, look, this is Wilson."
That's brilliant. He had a few stories about Guy. There are a few. My favourite one is the Watford one, where he couldn't get a work permit. He didn't have a work permit, so the club said that, "Don't worry, he's not even in the country." And as I'm interviewing Damien Matthews after the Watford loss, he walked past. He walked right in front of the camera.
I remember that game.
Yeah, let's leave that there, shall we?
Right, so welcome back to Cheltenham Live. That put a smile on my face. I hope it did you guys as well. Laurie Wilson speaking about his time at the club, in particular that song that was sung about him, but also quite a funny story there involving Guy Luzon, which I had heard before, but it's funny to hear it from the horse's mouth there. I'm sure if you were listening on the stream yesterday, you were seeing it was great company, and great to have Laurie Wilson back at the Valley yesterday. I don't know, Terry, did he say what he's up to now? Because I think he's just left Ebbsfleet, has he? Does he know what's coming next?
Yeah, I think he does. He's going to go part-time. His contract was up at Ebbsfleet. It wasn't as if they just got rid of him or he decided to leave. The contract was up and he decided that actually it was good timing. He's got this business plan that he's doing, I think it's insurance. And so he's going to pursue that, but at the same time then go part-time, play part-time football, so he still gets to play and he still earns something out of the game, and he's also looking at potentially if he enjoys yesterday, which I think he did, then maybe do a little bit of media as well, maybe locally. So I think he seems a happy boy. He's still in good shape by the looks of it. He's all with a plant-based diet, which I have no idea what that is, and I don't begin to understand how people can survive on eating plants. But there we are. He seems to manage it, and he just seemed at well with himself and with the world. So it was good. It was a joy to have alongside.
Excellent, yeah. Great to see Laurie Wilson back at the Valley yesterday. I'm sure we could do with a player with his endeavour. As we go into these final three games of the season, let's look ahead to the one coming up on Wednesday then, Tom. Birmingham away. They've lost their last four. They haven't won since coming back from lockdown. In fact, they haven't won. The last time they won was away at Barnsley on the 11th of February before lockdown. So it's a long time. Obviously, Pep Clotet was always going to be leaving at the end of the season, but he'd done so badly recently that they've decided to let him go slightly early. They've had a couple of caretakers in charge. Beaten 2-0 at Stoke today. By the time Stoke went 1-0 up on 12 minutes, it could have been 3 or 4. Sam Kluklus made it 2-0 just before half-time. They never came back into it in the second half. I didn't watch the second half, so I don't know if they performed any better, but I'd be surprised, judging by... I follow quite a few Birmingham fans on Twitter, judging by what they said. It probably is must win, although if we lose, we'll probably still be a point outside the relegation zone, because that seems to be how it's going recently, but... realistically, with the two games that follow after that, we need to pick up a 3 points here. I don't think we can even come away with a point, because we need to pick up 3 points. Don't you think, Tom?
I think it has to be must win. And I go back to what I said earlier in the show, that if we can't beat a Birmingham side that, as you say, haven't won in that amount of time and are all over the place, then I don't think we deserve to stay up, to be honest. And I don't think it's going to be an easy game. They're going to make it difficult for us, I'm sure. But we have to go there, and we have to get all 3 points. And I don't really care who scores, and I don't care how it goes in. We just need to get a goal and need to get a win. And then Wigan is still huge. And I imagine still, I was saying to someone, I think, on Twitter today, that I still think it's going to come down to that last day, unfortunately. But yeah, you're looking at that Birmingham game and you're thinking, well, if we can't get 3 points there, then where exactly are we going to do it? So absolutely massive, but definitely must win.
Yeah, I mean, it must be getting to that stage, Lewis, now, where obviously Lee Bowe has had to wrestle with balancing players' minutes and making sure players don't play too much, otherwise they'll pick up an injury. But surely Wednesday, as you put your best team out, and does that include Alfie Doughty starting? Does that include Johnny Williams starting? Which way do you think, what decisions do you think Lee Bowyer has to make for Wednesday's game up at St Andrews?
I agree with you. I think he has to go and field his best 11. I do wonder whether he'll play the five at the back system that we did against Brentford, because as much as we didn't win that game in the end, I thought we were fairly effective. I thought we played quite well. And Alfie is very good going forward as a wing back. As a left back, he's sort of called upon more defensively, so whether they'll view that as a bit of a weakness, I don't know. But I think that he has to. I don't think anything Alfie's done since the restart would prevent him from walking into that starting 11, because someone's reading earlier and said he has so much pace and he's so dangerous with the ball going forward. His crossing's decent, he seems to run it into the box, and it's just, as we say, like, it's just about our strikers getting a toe on it or something, or it bouncing off someone's shin and going in. Just that bit of luck is all we need. And I think he has to field his best 11. Johnny, I'd like to see Johnny play, but he hasn't really come back. As Bowyer said a couple of weeks ago, he's not really come back the fittest. We saw him come on yesterday for 45. I thought he did okay. I thought he played quite well up at Brentford, but got sort of kicked up in the air a little bit, as he usually does. But, and also, I think that Albie has to start. I think Albie Morgan, for me, is so creative and has so much about him. Yes, has he made a couple of defensive mistakes? Probably, but I agree with what Tom said earlier on in the show, that the criticism is incredibly harsh, because he can make things happen. We had so many great chances from some of Albie's play that's, to me, that's probably more valuable. So I'd like to see Albie start, but also I would like to see Johnny play. So it's just a case of squeezing all these midfielders in somehow. But ultimately, we've got to look at who's going to get us a goal, aren't we? And I think that Albie, although at the moment hasn't scored, has got a bit of a shot on him and he gets in good positions. And I think that sooner or later, he's going to manage to sort of hit one from distance from a corner and it's going to nestle in the top corner somewhere. But for me, we've got to go all out and go for it. I think you stick with the 4-4-2 we've been playing and just go out attacking and see what we can do. But yeah, for me, Alfie Doughty has to come into that side, because he brings so much to the team.
Yeah, with Terry, Birmingham have conceded 3 goals on each of their last 5 home games. They haven't kept a clean sheet at home. since October. Charlton aren't scoring goals with any form of regularity at the moment, so something has to give. I'm hoping it's going to be our stat and not theirs.
The opportunity is there. Nobody can doubt that, and we're coming up against a club that is arguably, apart from necessarily behind the scenes, but certainly in this, on the face of it, on the pitch side of it, in a similar turmoil. So it is an opportunity, no question about it. And I tend to agree with both the guys that we need to go at Birmingham a little bit and really worry them from the off. And I'd be tempted, I think, and I wonder if Bowie would be, to start the similar side that played Brentford, because we went at Brentford in the opening sort of 10 or 15 minutes and got that goal and worried them. Obviously, after that, Brentford taught us a bit of a footballing lesson and dragged us all over the place, and that's why we ran out of legs. You get the feeling that the teams like Birmingham aren't going to do that. So I'd like to see us take it to Birmingham, and if we can get that goal up, and maybe even two at a push, then teams like Birmingham are going to struggle to break us down in the same way that Brentford did. So I'm wondering whether you start with Alfie Doherty, definitely, Johnny Williams potentially, or even with Albie and then Johnny on later. If we can go at a team like Birmingham in the early stages and try and get that goal up, and then if we're hanging on then, I'd rather be... I fancy our chances to hang on against Birmingham, like we did against Hull, for example, than a team like Brentford.
No, we'll see. Look, it's a massive, massive game on Wednesday. Don't forget to sign up to Value Pass to make sure you can watch it. The streamer will be commentating, of course, with Terry and Greg. That's what I'll be doing. I'll be watching at home and cheering on the boys and praying that we can get a massive 3 points. Well, let's draw a line then underneath this week's show. Thank you to Tom, to Lewis and to Terry for joining me.
Cheers.
Good to hear from all of you guys. I've been Louis Mendez. I'm really pleased that you guys listened to the whole podcast. Thanks to all of you who joined in as well with your emails. We'll be back on Thursday to talk about whatever happens in Wednesday's massive game at Birmingham. I'm praying that we'll have some good news for you. Thanks for listening to this week's show, and we'll speak to you in the week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.